It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The state health department says depression during pregnancy, around childbirth, or within the first year postpartum, it's common and it may be significantly underdiagnosed. As the Food and Drug Administration approves a pill for treating postpartum depression, call in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Neetha Shenoy is a visiting associate professor of psychiatry at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Shenoy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So as the FDA approves this first oral medication to treat postpartum depression, as a psychiatrist who could prescribe this medication in the future, what is your initial reaction?
This is a significant milestone in reproductive psychiatry, which historically has not seen sufficient attention in research. As you mentioned, postpartum depression is a serious and potentially life-threatening condition. Postpartum depression is also common and underdiagnosed and affects an estimated 1 in 7 women. This is the first oral treatment approved for postpartum depression. It's a more practical option in comparison to what is currently on the market, which is brexanolone, and that is an IV infusion. And this has the potential to be a more accessible option as well.
So if it is so common, postpartum depression, why isn't there a pill till now?
That's a great question. There hasn't been a lot of research and attention in postpartum depression, and in the recent years, they've been looking into this more. What we currently have on the market is something called brexanolone, which was approved in 2019, and that's an IV infusion over 60 hours, but requires an inpatient hospitalization and can potentially be very costly. This oral formulation, which is a sister formulation with oral bioavailability, has the potential to be more accessible.
And when you say more accessible, who should be taking it once the pill is available?
One of the challenges is determining who will benefit the most. And if we look at the patients who were recruited in the trial, that gives us a good idea of who may benefit. In the randomized controlled double-blind placebo trial, they recruited women 18 to 45 years old who scored high on a standard depression scale and who had major depressive episodes sometime between the third trimester and 4 weeks postpartum. They excluded women who breastfed, who had mild to moderate depression, bipolar or psychotic disorders, patients who had a risk of suicide or attempted suicide in the current episode of postpartum depression were also not included. So the study suggests that women with severe postpartum depression would benefit, but does not tell us the effect on women with mild to moderate postpartum depression.
So if you do have mild depression, it sounds like this pill is not a viable treatment. What would be a better medical course for mild depression?
For postpartum depression, mild to moderate, the general treatment recommendations are what we use in the general population. So this would consist of psychotherapy and antidepressants such as SSRIs.
So it's recommended patients take this new pill once a day for 14 days. Other antidepressant medications take weeks to become effective. Why is this new pill fast-acting?
A key difference is that zuranolone decreased depressive symptoms as soon as day 3 in the trials, whereas other antidepressants can take weeks to see an effect. And like you mentioned, it's also designed to be taken over 14 days. The rapid response is thought to occur because the medication targets the hormonal mechanism behind postpartum depression. Zuranolone is a version of a naturally occurring hormone called allopregnanolone, a metabolite of progesterone. Concentrations of allopregnanolone rise during pregnancy, peak in the third trimester, then drop rapidly after childbirth, which is thought to be a major factor in postpartum depression. And the theory is, by targeting this pathway, symptoms of postpartum depression would decrease.
We're talking with Dr. Neetha Shenoy, a psychiatrist and a visiting associate professor at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, as we look at this first oral treatment for postpartum depression that was approved by the FDA. And you can join in with your questions, your concerns, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Shenoy, it's unclear when or how much this new pill will be covered by insurance. Who is responsible for making those decisions?
We don't know yet the price tag and when to expect any announcements about this. And while anyone can develop postpartum depression, those from lower socioeconomic groups and people of color face higher risk. The price and insurance coverage will ultimately affect accessibility and how widely it may be prescribed. Now, the decisions for this is going to come from the manufacturer. And per the manufacturer, payer decisions for coverage are expected in the months after the USDEA scheduling of zuranolone as a controlled substance.
And patients in studies of this new pill, they were monitored for a month after the 14-day dosage. And one criticism is that, look, this hasn't been studied long enough. The study lacks longevity. Is that a concern to you as a psychiatrist?
Yes. In the trials, women were followed for 45 days. The response was sustained and clinically meaningful at the 45-day mark, but you're right, we don't currently have any data on the trajectory of symptoms beyond 45 days. So there are still many questions on the duration of response, long-term consequences, and how it compares to currently available treatments such as SSRIs. And in thinking about the long-term treatment of postpartum depression, though there's a lot to be excited about with the approval of this novel agent, experts in the field also caution that this is not a simple fix. Human behavior and emotions are complex. In addition to the neurobiology, there are societal factors that have significant effects. Two examples would be the need for affordable childcare and lack of standardization of parental leave. And alongside the medications that are being researched, we need to take a holistic approach and address these factors as well.
That could certainly bring down stress if you know who's going to be caring for that child and that child will be in a safe, comfortable setting and that there is money available for that family to live, not just trying to get by. And looking at this new pill, this drug made headlines, and I wonder if it helped increase awareness for postpartum depression and whether you think that is a valuable to have that type of focus.
That is extremely valuable. And one of the things that is challenging about postpartum depression is that there's a lot of stigma associated with the diagnosis. Childbirth and motherhood is thought to be in society a really positive period in somebody's life. And so if they're struggling, then it may be even more challenging to seek out help. And so I think it's great that the drug and the FDA approval has put this in the news and at the forefront.
Dr. Shenoy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Neetha Shenoy is a visiting associate professor of psychiatry at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And our discussion on postpartum depression, it continues with a look at the research and advocacy work underway in Wisconsin. And you can be part of this. Call in now with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The federal government's Office on Women's Health, it says depression is a common problem after pregnancy. We discuss breakthroughs in postpartum depression with a Wisconsin perspective. Call in with a question or comment along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Shanita Roach is legislative co-chair of the Wisconsin chapter of Postpartum Support International. She's a maternal mental health advocate, founder of Shades of You, Shades of Me. That's a campaign to increase awareness of multicultural maternal mental health. Shanita, welcome to the Ideas Network. Good morning.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes. And we also have Roseanne Clark with us, UW School of Medicine and Public Health Psychiatry Department professor and director of the UW Postpartum Depression Research Program. Roseanne, welcome.
Thank you.
Roseanne, let's start with you. What does this new pill approved by the FDA mean for people who have just given birth?
Well, as my colleague said, it is really revolutionary. It remains to be seen who benefits most from it and who will be able to access it. But certainly that it works quickly is very, very important. There are very long wait lists right now to access mental health evaluation and treatment in Wisconsin, really all over the country. And so a medication that can be helpful to women and works quickly is very, very important and can also allow women to be able to make better use of psychotherapy as well.
Shanita, mental health conditions being the leading cause of pregnancy-related deaths in the U.S., that's according to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Is there enough awareness about postpartum depression?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, as we're going forward in talking about it and raising awareness around it, I think the more education and information that's circulating now is helpful to those who have suffered with postpartum depression, whether it's diagnosed, treated, and is helpful for other family members and supportive bodies.
You experienced postpartum depression. Could you share some of your experience with us, some of your story?
Oh, absolutely. So I am a mother of three boys. And when I was 21 years old, I had my first bout with postpartum depression. And I struggled and did not recognize that it was postpartum depression because there was not enough information at the time, which was 23 years ago. It was not enough information circulating around postpartum depression. It was categorized at that time as clinical depression.
What did that mean for you? What did it feel like?
The symptoms that I experienced was crying often, withdrawals from my son, my second son, and not really knowing how to express my feelings because I come from a big, loving family. And for me to start experiencing withdrawals from him and not really wanting to be attached was difficult in our bonding stages.
Roseanne, as you hear Shanita's story, what comes up? How debilitating can postpartum depression be?
Oh, it can be so debilitating as Shanita is describing. And then there's the resulting guilt for not having the loving feelings towards one's baby or not being able to have the energy to be able to pick up and respond to your baby's cues or play with one's baby. I do want to stress, though, that women who experience depression postpartum do not, it's not that all women who are experiencing depression have a difficult time responding to their babies, but many do. It's hard. It's really it's just very hard to have the energy. It's they're very distressed and often overwhelmed. I mean, that's what we hear from many, many women. There's a lot of anxiety as well as depression, and they feel overwhelmed and many women don't know what's happening to them. And that goes for their partners as well. So it can be very frightening.
Let's take a call now. Jackie joining us from Appleton. Jackie, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to express the fact that I feel like we throw pills at too many things nowadays, and I'm not saying that people don't get to a point where they definitely need some medical attention in that aspect, but I feel like we don't dig deep enough to try to figure out what the true problem is. And for me, what I've seen, having been a mother, birthed three babies, one as a surrogate for a friend of mine where I did not find that I had postpartum depression, and at being a former military spouse, dealing with a lot of friends who went through PTSD, I feel like the biggest concern is lack of sense of community. We have lost our sense of community, and I feel like people discount that. They don't take that into context first and foremost, and people are not having the support that they need afterward, and that's causing a lot of this. So why are we throwing a pill at it instead of trying to recreate a sense of community first?
Jackie, thank you so much for calling in. Roseanne, you first, about the support systems around someone before turning to medications?
Absolutely. So I'm a clinical psychologist, and we are currently working with home visiting programs across Wisconsin, urban, rural, and tribal communities. And you're absolutely right, Jackie, that the sense of social isolation is important in terms of much of what contributes to depression postpartum. It's really a combination of hormonal and individual or family history of affective disorders, depression, anxiety, but a lack of, like you said, a sense of community, of social support, is a large contributing factor. So we're right now running a clinical trial supported by the Centers for Disease Control, where we're bringing a relational approach. So it's a group for women, and transportation is provided, and childcare, and there's time to meet with other women, and then to have time with their babies in mother-infant activities. And so it's all about reducing social isolation and increasing social support. So thank you for your comment.
I do want to bring up, though, Shanita, you talked about having that loving support system of family around you, and that it wasn't enough, that there truly was postpartum depression. Can you speak to that in seeking medication as well, that sometimes that is the right course?
So I think everyone has their own individual course that they take. So it could be a trauma response. Oftentimes postpartum depression could go further into postpartum psychosis. And if we could potentially identify the symptoms of postpartum depression first, it absolutely can be an interim into a rapid response to that individual, as well as, because it's not a miracle drug, right? Mm. It's not a miracle drug, but it absolutely could be aided with therapy. So absolutely seeing someone who is having symptoms, sending them down a pathway to where they could get help and support, whether that's community-based, whether that's psychiatric, whether it's hospitalization. I believe that what the response is, again, will be individualized and appropriate.
That is Advocate Shanita Roach. We have mental health researcher Roseanne Clark as we talk about postpartum depression and maternal mental health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Roseanne, what is the difference between so-called baby blues and postpartum depression?
About 80% of all women experience some baby blues, but that usually resolves at about 10 days postpartum, and is primarily a result of the drop in hormones of progesterone and estrogen with the birth of the child. And a postpartum depression is actually a major depressive episode, meaning that it goes on for at least 2 weeks or longer, and it is experienced most days, most of the day, characterized by symptoms of low mood and anhedonia, or lowered interest in what used to be pleasurable. So they're quite different. And postpartum depression, and as Janita mentioned, postpartum psychosis as well, are very, very important to have evaluated carefully. And there are a number of treatment options. So as Janita was saying, it should be individualized and should be decided by the woman.
Roseanne Clark with us, Shanita Roach. You can call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's health department, it cites 1 in 5 pregnant people in our state are not screened for depression during prenatal care visits. And we discuss advocacy and the research underway in pregnancy-related mental health care as a new pill is approved by the Food and Drug Administration to treat postpartum depression. Call in with a question, share your comment at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Shanita Roach, who is a legislative co-chair of Wisconsin's chapter of Postpartum Support International, and Roseanne Clark is here, professor in the Department of Psychiatry at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, directs its postpartum depression research program. Roseanne, we heard from Angie in Madison, called in wondering if postpartum depression is prevalent in other countries and in other cultures. What can you tell us?
Yes, it is. In low-resource countries, just like here in for women who are living in poverty, the prevalence rates are higher. And because it goes across all socioeconomic strata, however, when there are more stressors in one's life, there's more that's contributing to things not feeling in one's control, more anxiety, which can keep one up at night after getting up to feed one's baby, not being able to get back to sleep, which can keep the depression going. So yes, it's prevalent across the world, and more so for women living in poverty.
Shanita, can you share how much is life trauma a factor here? What would you tell Angie? Shanita, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. Yes.
What I would tell Angie is that postpartum depression doesn't have a face to it, nor does it have a racial background. It is not biased. So with that being said, absolutely, it has other factors in which could contribute to the extremity or the spectrum of from mild to moderate to severe of the postpartum depression that one may experience. So when you look at it from a global perspective, absolutely, those who are already in impoverished conditions, those who have lack of access to affordable health care, child care, all those other underlying conditions first before identifying that they may struggle with postpartum depression or with other ailments. First is recognizing the condition that they're already in, plus identifying some of the symptoms of what postpartum depression is. So this is a global health issue, cultural health issue.
Shanita, you run this national conference and the campaign supporting maternal women of diverse backgrounds, and the conference is coming up. What are the gaps in maternal health for people of color, for parents having a child?
Oh, so the maternal health gaps in women who are having children is one identifying ways of where trauma may still lie, whether it's childhood trauma or trauma during the time of pregnancy, postnatal. Those are areas that we're still looking into as we're speaking more about postpartum depression. Culture is a barrier for many as we're speaking about and expressing what postpartum depression is in cultures, identifying some of those stigmas and barriers, identifying also environmental issues, such as if there's been a transition within their life, like dynamics, lifespan. So that could be whether there's been incarceration, something that is really, really
jarring.
Yes, to them, overwhelming. And it doesn't allow them to really see their state of mind. So this conference is an identifier to raise awareness around what maternal mental health is and what does it really mean to cultures? What is embedded in cultures that is not traditionally cultural?
Roseanne, zooming in on stigma that Shanita brought up, is there reluctance for people who've just given birth to discuss symptoms of depression or anxiety because of the stigma around mental health?
Absolutely. And that's really unfortunate. There's a big effort to try to reduce the stigma by having screening occur in family practice, pediatric, OBGYN clinics, and having it be something that can be talked about. But there's concerns. People hear about babies being taken away from mothers, which does not happen for because of postpartum depression. It's there has to be much more severe difficulty in being able to care for one's child. But women are worried about that.
Shanita, are there factors that discourage women of color from seeking medical attention for depression symptoms, severe depression symptoms after giving birth?
Absolutely. Historically, it has been a response of where women have went into their clinician and they've expressed something that is similar to or seem as if it's symptomatic towards depression, postpartum, anything really that could seem as if it's high risk in expression. So oftentimes women of color do not express whatever symptoms that they are enduring because it has been historically where children have been removed from their families.
We're talking about postpartum depression and maternal mental health with advocate Shanita Roach. We have researcher Roseanne Clark, and you can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Roseanne, a number of states, California, Illinois, Louisiana, New Jersey, require maternal mental health screening during prenatal and postpartum visits. What is the status of mental health screening here in Wisconsin?
Yes, it's not required here in Wisconsin. It's definitely happening more. It's part of the electronic medical record in many clinics, but it is currently there's no legislation like in the states that you named. And it's very, very important to have screening be universal. Many women are having who are experiencing depression postpartum have thoughts of harming themselves and sometimes of harming their babies. And it's so important to be able to have that conversation. And the screening itself provides a way for doctors and nurses to be able to start that conversation.
If postpartum depression isn't treated, is left untreated, how long might these severe symptoms last?
They can clearly last for a year or longer. Mm. They don't just resolve. So it's very, very important for it to be treated and treated to the point where it's really resolved. And so very, very important, whether it's psychotherapy, medication, a combination of both. And we're looking right now at treating not only the depression, but also the relationships impacted by the depression and the relationships that may also contribute to the depression.
Shanita, what policies, what laws would be helpful for people experiencing postpartum depression?
So I agree with what was just stated, that legislation absolutely is catching up with the everyday experience of women who are giving birth, people who are giving birth. So some of the legislation actually that is going forward is FMLA, mm-hmm. After a woman gives birth, not just for the woman, but also for the father. Some of the legislation absolutely can include universal perinatal screening. So when you just mentioned just a couple of states who have identified that perinatal screening should take place during the course of the time of the visit, her perinatal visit onto after labor and delivery, that is just a couple of states. We need more federal mandate of universal perinatal screening in order for all people to feel as if they are being screened to ask appropriate questions according to what they are enduring at that moment.
Shanita, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Shanita Roach is legislative co-chair of the Wisconsin chapter of Postpartum Support International, founder of Shades of You, Shades of Me. It's a national awareness campaign on multicultural maternal mental health. UW Psychiatry Department Professor Roseanne Clark stays with us as we explore the mother-infant therapy group approach for postpartum depression. Call in with a question, a comment along the way, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Amid advancements in care for people suffering from postpartum depression, we learn about a program integrating mother-infant therapy and in-home visits through the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. We have psychologist and professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Roseanne Clark, with us. Roseanne, you developed the mother-infant therapy program. Why work with people in the Wisconsin home visiting program?
The home visiting programs in Wisconsin are funded through McVie, which is the maternal child home visiting federal funding program. And they are serving women who are living in poverty, and they mandate screening in all of the programs. And so women are identified in these programs, but home visitors are often feeling ill-equipped to be able to address the mental health needs of the women who they're seeing in their weekly home visits. So we're partnering with home visiting programs in a randomized clinical trial and looking at home visiting services as usual compared to bringing in a mental health professional from the community and providing this approach that both treats the depression as well as co-occurring anxiety, trauma history in the mother, and also the mother-infant relationship, and fathers or partners come in for several of the sessions as well.
Why go into homes? Why not a clinical setting?
Well, it's not either or, but mm-hmm. many women with infants and young children, especially in our climate, it's very hard to get to the clinical setting. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes women have other children as well, and if they're having to take public transportation, it's very hard. And as I said earlier, there are also long wait lists for appointments in clinical settings. The home visitors are seeing women every week. It's a trusted relationship. And so the idea of supporting them in their professional development to be able to address mental health concerns is important in terms of more women's needs being addressed.
I wonder, too, that the healthcare providers and the people who are part, the team and part of these home visits can look for cues or see, be more informed about the environment that the new mother is in and perhaps be able to be more of assistance.
Absolutely. They definitely see and hear what's happening in the woman's life, and particularly in terms of relationships, mm-hmm. but also other stressors in their lives. So in addition to the screening, just listening, you know, whether it's food insecurity, housing insecurity, domestic violence, stressful family relationships. It was said earlier how important support is, and it is, but family relationships are sometimes complicated, and there can be support provided, but there also can be stress and expectations. And so, yes, home visitors are in a unique role. So we have already conducted an efficacy trial funded through the National Institute of Mental Health in the Department of Psychiatry, looking at this group mother-infant approach. And now we are translating that into the community so that it's more accessible for women and more women can be reached, as well as home visitors and mental health professionals in the community can be able to have more professional development and reflective consultation support on a regular basis from our team at UW Psychiatry around perinatal mental health.
What happens after the efficacy trial is concluded? What are the steps from there?
Right. Thanks for asking. We are looking at dissemination of this two-generation mother-infant family approach to postpartum depression so that it's not only medication or individual psychotherapy that is offered to women, but understanding that there are many who are impacted by the woman's depression, the woman herself, as it can be so debilitating, as well as her infant, because there are more delays and disturbances in infants where a mother has experienced a postpartum depression, especially if it's untreated and goes on for a long period of time. And as well as the husband or partner. And again, it's very two-way street where relationships can contribute to the depression and depression can impact the relationships. So that's why we think it's very important to treat the relationships as well as the depression. So further dissemination of MITG or the mother-infant therapy model is part of what is being funded by the Centers for Disease Control. So we're at the same time as the clinical trial we're running, looking at the effectiveness of this approach, which includes interpersonal cognitive behavioral stress reduction strategies, including mindfulness, self-compassion, and yoga, because we know that when there's been trauma, also that can often stay in the body. So yoga and movement and mindfulness meditation can be extremely important, as well as supporting positive experiences and the strengths of the woman and what she's bringing to the relationship with her baby. So having a mother-infant relationship be supported with a recognition for the strengths and to have enjoyable experiences of music and baby games, baby massage is very important as well.
We have psychologist and researcher Roseanne Clark, director of the UW Postpartum Depression Research Program. Roseanne, picking up on what you said there about newborns and in-home visitors, how do you take cues from the baby? I mean, what might be some social cues that you're looking for in that infant?
So sometimes we see a very subdued affect, not a lot of pleasure expressed. And babies at times will avert their gaze, they'll turn away, which can feel very rejecting, you can imagine, to the mother. But if the baby looks up at the mother and the mother is looking flat, which can often happen with depression, or sad, or frustrated and angry, then that can be very disorganizing for an infant. And so babies will adaptively look away. And again, that can be very distressing for a mother and feel quite rejecting, or contribute to her sense of not feeling very competent in the mothering role. So again, babies who don't show much positive affect, who are distressed a lot of the time or looking flat themselves.
In our last, few moments together, where are you hoping the mother-infant therapy program goes in the future?
We're hoping that that funders like medical assistants will fund this type of approach and fund it outside of clinics so that more women can access it. And we're also, through our Capstone program in infant, early childhood, and family mental health, we're addressing workforce development of training more mental health professionals and others who are supporting parents in the transition to parenthood, and that they have more of the evidence-based resources and approaches for screening, assessment, evaluation, and treatment.
Roseanne, thank you for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you for focusing on postpartum mood and anxiety disorders.
Roseanne Clark, professor in the Department of Psychiatry at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Earlier, we spoke with Dr. Neetha Shenoy and Shanita Roach. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.